What if the solution to all the emission problem, all the traffic problem in the world, came at a cost of more emissions? That's a little dramatic, but basically, in today's episode, we're going to be talking about autonomous vehicles and the cost of the computing that's associated with it, and how a team at MIT has some ideas on how to make it better. So if that sounds interesting to you, then buckle up and let's get into it.
I'm Daniel.
And I'm Forbode.
And this is the Next Byte Podcast. Every week, we explore interesting and impactful tech and engineering content from Weevolver.com and deliver it to you in bite-sized episodes that are easy to understand, regardless of your background.
All right, folks, you already heard it. We're talking about autonomous vehicles. But before we jump in, I want to talk about an article from today's sponsor, Mouser Electronics, that's all about the rules for autonomous vehicles. If you're not familiar with Mouser, we work with them quite a bit now. And we love them. But one of the reasons we love them is because they're one of the world's biggest electronic suppliers. And what that means for, you know, the audience that...
For us.
Yeah, for us, is that they have a lot of interesting insights about the various trends that are happening in the autonomous vehicle efforts and AI and a lot of cool like little sub disciplines. Cutting edge tech. So they have this like whole article about what the rules for autonomous vehicles should be. And the way that I've used their resources so far has been as a primer for the topics that we talk about on a day-to-day basis. But basically, we have all these limitations that we got to consider, right? We have a lot of computation happening. Autonomous vehicles are supposed to be very green, but they use a lot of energy. And that's actually a perfect segue into today's article. You're interested in reading about it before you go into today's article, we're going to be linking it in the show notes. Definitely check it out. I think it's really, really worth the read. But talking about today's article, we're going to be hopping over to MIT, the Department of Electrical Engineering and Computer Science, and MIT's Laboratory for Information and Decision Systems. So, as we've kind of alluded to it by now, electric vehicles and the promise of autonomous vehicles is not just about the comfort for the person, right? It's supposed to bring us a lot of efficiency in terms of getting around, but there's also supposed to be much better for our environment.
Well, we've talked about this in terms of reduced travel time on the road because a lot of traffic is caused by drivers making mistakes. We've talked about, you know, as a part of that, you're getting from point A to point B faster. You're also consuming less energy while you're doing that, et cetera, et cetera. But this team from MIT, right, they're studying what the actual impacts of, you know, massive portion of our vehicles on the road turning to autonomous vehicles and maybe some of the unintended consequences of that as well.
Yeah. So what are some of these unintended consequences, right? That's what they're really trying to figure out here. You have a couple of factors to keep in mind with these cars. First of all, we have a lot of cars, and these cars have a lot of different sensor systems, have a lot of computing systems, and they're going to be used for an X amount of time on a daily basis. And then you have their source of power. Like, how are we generating the power that's driving these systems? So keeping all that in mind, they're trying to model the emissions that are going to be associated with all these various subsystems and these computing systems that's going to enable autonomous driving, right?
Right, and talking about autonomous vehicles specifically, not the total energy consumption of the autonomous vehicle, but specifically related to the energy consumption related to computation required to make this thing drive on its own. So we're not talking about, what's the form factor of the vehicle? Does it have a low drag coefficient? Mm-hmm. Is it going to be really efficient in terms of aerodynamics or in terms of power consumption for propulsion? That's not what the conversation is about today. The conversation is strictly about the computers inside those cars being used to make decisions in a self-driving capacity. Basically, how much can we expect those cars to consume power, and what's the emissions impact of that power consumption, right?
And that is a critical clarification that you just made, right? Because the number that I'm about to share now, it is just for the computing system. So what these folks, the framework that they've developed and the estimate that they have so far is that if we have 1 billion cars driving for 1 hour per day using a standard self-driving platform, it is estimated to generate the same level of emissions as all the data centers in the world.
I mean, and that makes sense, right? That's a lot of computing power. It's a lot of computational load, but like that feels like a huge mic drop to me, right? All the data centers, all the cloud storage, all the cloud computing that we're doing in the world today accounts for about the total emissions of the country of Argentina.
Mm-hmm.
We're saying, you know, in the next couple of years, if we want a billion cars on the road to be autonomous, and that's about 2/3 of the total cars on the road right now. There's around 1.5 billion cars in the world right now. So they're saying, you know, over the next couple of decades, if we transfer to about 2/3 of those cars being autonomous, driving for 1 hour per day, which is the average time that a vehicle spends on the road, using a standard self-driving computer, we will basically add the amount of emissions as all of the data centers in the world, or think about all the emissions of the entire country of Argentina, will be added just by us computing self-driving decisions, which is kind of crazy.
It is wild. That just like actually shocked me a little bit. Now, I feel like, you know, before we, I don't know, get too taken away by this statistic, there's some factors to keep in mind on top of the ones that we already talked about. So you have, for example, I said number of cars, right? There's a level of uncertainty with the number of cars that they use for their estimate, right? The number of cars, for example, can decrease because now we have autonomous systems like autonomous Ubers that are going to be way cheaper than you ever having to pay for the lease or the monthly payment of a car. So most people or families just end up not buying cars. And now we have less cars on the road. Or because cars are now becoming much more accessible because you don't need to get a license to get one, or they're becoming more affordable to make because everything's standardized, you can have more cars because now they're just like a bicycle. You know, there's a bunch of different things, algorithms. You know,
the people that can't drive a car today, right? You know, elderly people, maybe their, you know, their vision's not great. They can't, you know, they can't maintain a license to drive a car, or really, really young people.
Early high schoolers, yeah.
You know, once we've got self-driving autonomous vehicles that we trust, right? You know, there'll be a time that you send your elementary schooler to school alone in a self-driving car, which sounds a little crazy now, but I don't think that future's all too far off. The interesting part here is the energy consumption is mainly a factor of the number of hours of car driving. So, you know, they're able to kind of neutralize these question marks around how many cars are there going to be on the road by basically just saying 1 billion hours of self-driving per day. This is the amount of energy consumption for it. So that's calculated by saying 1 billion cars driving for 1 hour per day. That's more of an assessment of the total self-driving demand every single day will be around 1 billion hours. And, you know, maybe that'll increase, maybe that'll decrease, but that's helped to make their algorithm a little bit more robust by saying, you know, they're not taking into account the carbon emissions to manufacture the car.
Right.
That's something that would be highly dependent on the number of cars on the road. They're strictly looking at the computational power required to operate the car, which is more of a factor of the number of hours driven, regardless of how many cars there are on the road, right?
But that also does take into account the current state of the grid, right? Like our current grid system, at least in the United States, it's like mostly fossil fuels. And there might be a future like at the near term where we do go renewable. And I don't know, maybe we crack fusion finally and everyone's deploying it, or we might just not crack that at all by the time that these things become like super available. And this is just, the estimates are going to be totally right. So again, a lot of unknowns. We don't know if this is the way that all of it is going to unfold, but it seems to be a pretty likely estimate using values that are our best guesstimates, right? So like, what's the solution here? Like now there's this platform, they've done this analysis, they've tried to take into account every unknown. What is the solution that we can get from it? Well, basically, there is a number. I think it's like 1.2 kilowatt is what the cap needs to be for every computing system in every electric car. And what that means in terms of keeping up with the complexity of these algorithms as they evolve over time, computing hardware needs to become twice as efficient every single year, just about every single year, to keep up with that. And that is just bizarre. Like, that's a huge ask, right?
Yeah, I mean, if we look at Moore's law, mm-hmm. right, you know, the theoretical law that's saying, you know, about the number of transistors, about the computing power is correlated to the number of transistors, and a dense integrated circuit doubles about every 2 years. So Moore's law tells us that, you know, our chips will be doubling in computing power about every 2 years. And right now we're actually struggling to keep up with that Moore's law prediction, right? This is saying we need to get twice as efficient every 1 year. That this sounds like a really, really tall ask to be able to make sure that we maintain carbon neutrality as we go into autonomous vehicles. But, you know, in the same way, we got to talk about future proofing as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if the efficiency of these processors are supposed to be improving by a factor of 2x every 1 year, we got to take into account the fact that cars stay on the road sometimes for 10 to 15 years. So there's going to be a lot of power consumption on the older model cars, even if they have the best of the best computers, state of the art, the day that it's built. Over the next 10 to 15 years, those will be less and less efficient compared to the, you know, the new latest and greatest, if that makes sense.
I mean, I feel like the best analogy here that might resonate with a lot of people is smartphones, or specifically iPhones, right? I just upgraded from an iPhone 7. That thing was overheating and dying within 2 or 3 hours now because, you know, there's the latest software updates that you have to go to for the new security features and yada, yada, yada. And those are just computationally way more intensive. And the chips that you have need to essentially overclock themselves to be able to keep up with that, which means they draw a lot more power from the small battery pack that you have. Now that I'm on the new platform, everything is much smoother because this hardware is optimized for it. And, like, you know, that's okay for a phone that's not meant to last more than 4 or 5 years and, you know, not super critical. But I'm driving a car that's pretty much 10 years old and I want to be able to drive it for at least another 10 years. I don't want it to give up on me, right? So how do you account for this? How do you make this a feasible implementation in vehicles moving forward? And what one of the suggestions that they had, which, Dan, I'm curious how you feel about this, is specialized hardware. So it's hardware that's made for specific tasks. It's not flexible. And, you know, that's the pros and cons. That's the compromise that you're going to be making there. But if you tailor hardware for a specific task, then you can keep using it as a target to improve on year over year instead of worrying about future proofing it.
And, you know, as a part of that, right, you don't have a lot of auxiliary hardware on that chip that needs to be powered for stuff that's not being used.
Right.
Right. You're not buying an off the shelf chip that's meant for multi-purpose computing. A lot of automotive companies are now focusing right down this path, right, of developing their own in-house chip designs, right, as opposed to buying a chip from somewhere else, developing their own in-house chip designs specifically tailored for the autonomous driving application that they plan to use. So that's definitely something that's a trend in the market today. And it's helpful to see that this research from this team at MIT reinforces that. Just to talk about, like, the scale of computation that we're talking about here, I think it helps contextualize it for everyone.
Yeah.
This 1 billion hours of vehicle driving per day, self-driving per day, they calculate that these decisions that would need to be made by all these chips, right, spread out in all these vehicles, that's 21.6 quadrillion inferences per day. That to me is insane, right, to try and quantify that number, the number of decisions that these computers in every single car are going to have to be making. To put that into perspective, all of Facebook's data centers worldwide make a few trillion inferences per day. 1 quadrillion is 1,000 trillion, right? So we're talking about 10,000 times as many decisions as all of Facebook data centers combined are going to be made by these cars every single day. So when we're talking about, you know, making chips more efficient, we're talking about, you know, maybe some ways to minutely improve efficiency or minutely decrease energy composition or energy consumption, rather. We're talking about this over a scale of a lot of vehicles making a lot of decisions. So when you multiply an incremental improvement just at the small scale, you know, removing 1% energy per decision, we're talking about doing this 21.6 quadrillion times per day. It makes a huge impact when we're talking about the amount of energy that's required to perform those operations, and then, you know, as a second hand or second order consequence of that, the amount of emissions that are required to produce that energy that goes into these computers. So I think, you know, it may not sound like a lot, right? We're talking about tweaking tiny things in the software to make it more efficient, or tweaking tiny things on this chip. It may not sound like a meaningful solution, but when we talk about the order in which, the magnitude in which these minute changes will be multiplied, it actually becomes a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. Now that's very useful context. There's something that came to my mind when I was reading this article, going back to, you know, that specialized hardware approach. So
yep.
I'm going to reference one of my favorite creators when it comes to the tech realm, and that's Marques Brownlee. If you guys don't know him, he's a tech reviewer on YouTube, and every year for the past couple of years, he's been holding this competition for the best smartphone cameras. They take pictures, people vote on it, they do some level of analysis, and then they show the results. What's been interesting is that the Google Pixel has, I think, been winning for a couple of years in a row now. And I don't know if it was like a Twitter thread or something where Marques broke down why this is such an interesting trend. And it goes back to a couple of years ago where the architect for the Google Pixel decided to choose a sensor that was actually not very powerful, not top of the line. And the design decision there was, we're going to pick this platform and just focus all of our efforts on the post-processing software side so that we're getting the maximum amount of value possible out of this piece of hardware versus what every other manufacturer does, which is pick the latest and greatest and then keep redeveloping and rediscovering on that new platform.
Yeah, they have to go back to the drawing board. They're reinventing the wheel
right. Every
single year, or every single model. Let's say when they pick a new sensor, they try to pick the latest and greatest sensor. But, you know, I remember this analysis he had, and I thought it was awesome, right? They've actually stuck with the same sensor for a number of different years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or at least a very similar sensor in the same family, right? And they've focused on deriving as much value as they can out of that sensor. And at the end of the day, it produces a better result, a better image than, you know, another company like Apple's, who's picking the, you know, latest and greatest sensor every single day.
Yeah.
I think you're like, I want to tee you up here to this conclusion you're going to make. I think this sounds a lot like what we should be focusing on in the automotive industry, right? To milk as much as we can out of the sensor, or I mean the computation platforms we have available today, right?
I mean, this is why this podcast is great. You know, you pick up what I'm putting down. That's exactly what I mean. Like at first, when you hear these numbers and the requirements that you got to meet for this level of computation, it's scary. But then you look at what's been possible on, like, you know, again, similar applications. You know, our phones do quite a lot of computation now. I think the iPhone 4 was 1,000 times stronger when it came to the number of computations it did than the computer that landed the lunar lander, right? Now, that's just crazy to think about. And now you're like, yeah. What, iPhone 14? So these things are pretty powerful. Now we're getting it in our cars. I think there are some lessons learned that we can carry from that. And by the way, another thing that was interesting to me is that this decision that the Google Pixel camera architect made was out of necessity. They didn't have the manufacturing levels that, like, the volumes that Samsung and Apple had. So they had to make, you know, compromises somewhere. But by making those compromises and putting their efforts somewhere else, they were able to, again, get the maximum value out of it. So now we're at this crossroads where we got to figure out, you know, do we just keep putting more and more power on these things and hope for the best? Or do we take a step back and think about the architecture of what we're leveraging for the computer systems that go in our cars and try to maximize and optimize those so that we can sustain them for 10, 20 years, just as we have been for non-computerized cars for the past, I don't know, 100 years or so. I don't know. Yeah. I think it's inspiring. I think, again, there's value add from other industry and standing on the shoulders of giants, which is just such a great phrase. But yeah.
I'm with you. And one last thing I'm thinking of here, this has got me thinking, right? I'm like really impressed by this team, right? So this team from MIT, if you're listening, we're really, really impressed by the work that you did. First author is Soumya Sudhakar, and she worked with her advisors, Vivian Say, and another professor, Sirtak Karaman, right? So we're impressed by the work you've done. I think it would be awesome if you can find a way to make this accessible, this tool, this research accessible to the people in the automotive companies and in the software companies and in the computing companies that are developing these products to help get them some context around, you know, this tool that I'm developing, right? This chip that I'm developing or this software that I'm developing that will run to help make self-driving cars work. Give them the context on how much energy consumption that will be and the context and how much emissions that will drive. I think there's a lot of designers and engineers in the world who are now taking, you know, for a while we've taken cost, timing, and quality as like the three North Stars, and you're trying to pick the right path between all those. I think there's a lot of people who are now adding a fourth North Star there, which is sustainability. I think giving people the data to make informed decisions on, should I choose this piece of hardware, or should I choose this piece of hardware, or should I do this with my software, or should I do that with my software, giving them the data to make a decision based on the amount of emissions that that will drive is a great way to help reduce the consumption, the energy consumption, a great way to help improve the efficiency of these energy platforms. Because otherwise, it's really, really easy for these engineers to be sitting in a black box and say, I'm going to make the greatest performance and it's going to work as fast as it possibly can. It's, you know, it's going to compute at this speed and, you know, it's going to work at this efficiency. And they end up, you know, producing something in a black box, again, without the context of how much emissions it's going to drive. I think if they can get the context of, you know, this is the energy consumption, and these are the emissions that you're directly going to drive on the order of billions of vehicles in the world, I think it can help people make informed decisions when they're at the design stage, and we don't have to worry about how to reduce energy consumption when they're already on the road.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a great idea. And coming from someone that works for one of the most popular auto manufacturers in the United States right now, which definitely has sustainability in mind, I think that's a great, great bit of advice. And we used to do this thing before we stopped doing it. I want us to start doing it again. I'm going to try to recap the core stuff that we talked about in this ELI 5, explain like I'm 5 method that inspired this whole podcast. So there's this problem where with autonomous vehicles, you know, where we're supposed to get sustainability and everything's supposed to be optimized and great, we're going to be using a lot of computing power. How much computing power? Well, apparently so much that it's estimated greenhouse gas emissions is going to match the amount produced by all the data centers in the world right now. So what can we do? Well, we can either go the route of making our computing systems twice as efficient every single year to keep up with the demand, or go the other route where we develop specialized hardware that can be maintained for 10 to 20 years at a time for these specific applications. Does that sound right? Did I do an okay job?
Hit the nail on the head.
Okay, I try. Well, with that said, I think it's a good spot to end the episode on. What do you think?
Yeah, I'll just note, like, lots of people have reached out asking how they can support. Best way you can help us, guys and gals, is if you can go to Spotify, go to iTunes, wherever you're listening, leave us a review. We appreciate your feedback, and you leaving a review helps us reach more people who have similar interests as you, and we can help grow this community of, you know, awesome makers, engineers, thinkers, people who aren't even engineers and just care a lot about cool technology. You know, the best way you can help is by going there, leaving a review if you haven't done so already.
Well said. Well said. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, we'll see you in the next one.
Peace.
That's all for today. The Next Byte podcast is produced by Weevolver. And to learn more about the topics we discussed today, visit weevolver.com. If you enjoy this episode, please review and subscribe via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or one of your favorite platforms. I'm Forbode.
And I'm Daniel.
Thank you for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.